policies. Enrollment in crop insurance was up 85% between 2016 and 2023. USDA says in 2021, insured acreage had grown to 444.5 million acres, with 40% covered by forage policy. To put that in perspective, there is almost 880 million acres in U.S. farms. U.S. Grains Council Chair Brent Boydston and past Chair Josh Miller flew south for meetings with major stakeholders in the U.S. and Mexico corn trade market. The goal was to maintain positive relationships with one of the U.S. agriculture's most valuable customers. Boydston says with the recent challenges to rail transport logistics affecting grain imports from Mexico, it's vital to work with the USDA Foreign Ag Service in Mexico to keep shipments moving. The UN Food and Agricultural Organization's Food Price Index stood at 120.4 points in May, up 0.9% from its April level. Increases for the price index for cereals and dairy products slightly offset decreases in those for sugar and vegetables. The meat index was unchanged. It was the third consecutive monthly index rise, but remained down 3.4% from the same time in 2023 and 25% below the 2022 peak.
Are you interested in adding bushels to your crop this summer? Dr. Greg Willoughby breaks down a unique, proven biological product called Full Scale.
So, Greg, Full Scale is really about adding weight to the seed, to the kernel or the soybean, whatever crop it may be at the end of the day. It's about adding volume and weight.
Correct. Yep. And so that's mainly based on phosphorus, nitrogen, and the micronutrients that kind of go with that. And we've seen in some of our analysis of kernel composition, you know, up to 20x times movement of those elements going from what an untreated going into a treated. So we're definitely moving more phosphorus, more nitrogen, more zinc, more manganese into those kernels.
To learn more about Full Scale, download the Field Link podcast wherever you get your podcast or contact your Helena representative.
Get the equipment and trucks you need at Ritchie Brothers Los Angeles Auction on June 27th and 28th. This absolute unreserved auction is open to the public and registration is free. For more details, visit rbauction.com.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Pass Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Pass Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks are wavering and are mixed in afternoon trading following the latest signal that the economy's growth may be slowing. U.S. financial markets will be closed tomorrow in observance of the Juneteenth holiday. Consumers barely increased spending in May from April as still high inflation and high interest rates are putting a dent in their shopping. Retail sales rising 0.1% in May, which was below economists' projections, though the figures are raising hopes for the Fed to slash interest rates later this year. And NVIDIA stock is up over 3% with the chipmaker on track to pass Microsoft and become the largest U.S. company by market value. That is if NVIDIA stock still holds on to gains through the market's close today. And shares of Lennar are falling over 4%. The home builder posted better than expected profit and revenue in its latest quarter, but disappointed with its outlook. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Something amazing is happening in education. Students are inspired and engaged. That's because school districts consulted with CDW, who designed modern classroom solutions with pre-configured HP devices, making learning more accessible, secure, and immersive. Now when students study topics like elephants, it feels like elephants are there with them. HP and CDW, make amazing happen. Learn more at cdw.com/hppsg.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Should the United States recognize Red China? If so, what's in it for us, and what's in it for the Chinese? I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by Mills Construction. For architectural, metal, roofing, and siding, call Aaron at 610-1256.
Too often in our pursuit of detente, we act as if a concession on our side is automatically helpful to the process as a whole. But if you think about it, nothing could make detente less meaningful, either to the United States or to the populations of the communist nations, than an unending series of one-sided American concessions. If our adversaries can get what they want, formal recognition, liberalized trade, technical help, what have you, without making any modifications in their foreign or domestic policies, then the basis for true friendship is erased. It's only by a change in the nature of communism, a movement away from the policies of aggression abroad and repression at home, that communism and the West will be able to live together in harmony. If the communists get the prestige and material aid they want without having to change any of their own policies, the seeds of future conflict will be continually nourished, ready to sprout anew with little or no warning. It seems to me that before making new concessions, our policymakers need to nail down, not just on paper, but in their own minds, exactly what it is we're getting in return. This applies in particular to the recognition of Red China, a move which would involve the downgrading of our relations with the Republic of China on Taiwan, which is a major trading partner and one of the most stable, prosperous Asian countries. Despite its severe political setbacks of the past 2 years in the United Nations and elsewhere, the Republic of China has emerged from a difficult period in robust economic health and with renewed political vigor. In the Far East, the concept of face is important. Recognition of the communist regime in Peking and downgrading of relations with Taipei is therefore a matter of great importance to the nations involved, and thus to us. We should not make such a move in the absence of concrete concessions from Peking. In the long run, no concession is more important than a relaxation of China's brutal policy toward its own people. With the victory of Premier Chou Enlai and his so-called moderate allies in the recent Communist Party conference, promises have been made to the Chinese people along these lines. Under a newly adopted constitution, the people, for the first time since the revolution, have been given the right to work for themselves and for their families' benefit. Industrial workers can moonlight. Peasants can cultivate private plots. In the political realm, there's to be less emphasis on strict conformity to the party line and more freedom to speak out. These moves come on the heels of warnings by the Chou faction that a continuation of the cruel repression favored by party chairman Mao Zedong could lead to overthrow of the government. Thus, the present relaxation may be more a matter of political survival than increased benevolence. Whatever the motives, we should welcome these steps and wait a considerable time to see whether they're implemented. This is especially important when we consider the advanced age and, in some cases, illness of China's current leadership and the chronic instability of China's politics in recent years. And we should be exacting a much tougher price in China's external policies. It's easy to talk of friendship with the United States when at the same time you're free to threaten war with Taiwan and to fund terrorist liberation movements in South Vietnam, Cambodia, and elsewhere. Before we even think about recognition of the Peking government, we should make sure their deeds match their words. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan, in his own voice, brought to you by Mills Construction, specializing in pre-engineered metal buildings. Call Aaron at 610-1256.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday, and welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Our first guest today is Melissa LaPena, with her own company, Living Your Best End. Melissa is an end-of-life doula. And we're going to explore what she does in this role. We're going to talk about death as a natural process, what it looks like, and how doulas assist clients and families. And then also talk about the aftermath of death and the importance of ritual and ceremony. Melissa, welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Thank you so much, Barry. Great to be here.
All right. And folks, we were joking before we got on here.
it does seem like kind of a creepy topic, but Melissa's going to decreep it for us.
Okay? Hopefully.
So stick with us, all right? All right, and then at the top of the hour, we've got Kevin Kester and Steve Arnold of the California Cattlemen's Association. We're going to go through state and federal legislative updates that impact Slo County cattlemen, the importance of cattle grazing in preventing wildfires and carbon sequestration, and the challenges and issues faced by our local and state cattlemen. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Melissa, I do want you to introduce yourself, but let's just tell everybody, for starters, the root, I guess it would be called the etymology of the word doula. So this is an ancient Greek word meaning female slave. And I know you're not a female slave, okay?
Not today.
I know your husband, and I don't think he'd put up with that. So anyway, today it refers to non-medical professional who works actually the bookends of life, which is birth. Many of you may have heard of a birthing doula, mm-hmm. in the audience, and now death. So for starters, tell us about your role as an end-of-life doula, and a bit about your background and how you got interested in all this.
Yeah, definitely. So a death doula or end-of-life doula does what one might think at that other bookend of life. So as you mentioned, Gary, a lot of people understand what a birth doula does in helping somebody enter the world. And so a death doula, who can be male or female, would help somebody exit this world. And they don't only help the person themselves, but they also support the family. And family could be, you know, biological or chosen.
And this is non-medical work, correct?
Yeah, exactly. It is dying is a life event. It is not a medical event. We all go through birth. We will all go through death. And so a doula, as a non-medical companion at this stage, for that stage of life, assists with emotional support and practical support, you know, social, spiritual. It is a complement to what the existing kind of medical team can offer.
And so what did you do before you did this?
Oh, what one might expect. Human resources and corporate recruiting for about 20 years.
Wow. And how did you get interested in this?
I'll tell you, I didn't grow up thinking I would become a death doula. I actually thought I was going to become a UPS driver because they delivered happiness in packages. I thought that I could do that. But instead, you know, as I mentioned, went into HR and corporate recruiting. And I had lost my father unexpectedly in 2016. And, you know, my parents, I still have my mother, and, my parents were planners. They pre-planned their funeral arrangements. So, that was very helpful. But there were so many other components of dealing with the loss of a loved one that I just didn't even know existed.
Give us some examples.
Oh, sure. So, you know, even just the administrative side of shutting down, you know, credit cards and Facebook and cell phones and, you know, notifying all your friends. And do we do an obituary? And, even just the little things about his celebration of life. Like, should we ask everyone to wear black? But he didn't really like wearing black. Well, so instead we made it his own and everybody wore Hawaiian shirts. You know, there was just so much that you didn't realize, including kind of that grief that comes and the fact that the grief doesn't necessarily go away, but you figure out a way to live with it. Mm-hmm. And so my experience from that opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, surprise, we've been dying as long as we've been living. In my opinion, haven't been supporting each other as best as we can. And so I wanted to figure out a way to be, to help people get through the end of life stages in just a much more supported fashion.
So tell the audience how you how long have you been doing this, and what kind of training did you take to do this, and what's the ongoing training look like?
Yeah, definitely. So as an end-of-life doula, I actually, you know, I started reading about it, you know, probably shortly after my dad passed away. And then I saw this momentum take on. There are two really large organizations here in the United States and internationally. It's NIDA and INELDA. INELDA is the International End-of-Life Doula Association, which is one of the two organizations that I receive my training from. The other is the Modern Death Care Life and Death Academy, which is based out of Canada. And to be an end-of-life doula, you don't actually have to be licensed to be an end-of-life doula. And the serving each other in this capacity, serving somebody when they're, you know, approaching end of life and serving their loved ones, is really innate within all of us. But, you know, like all of us, we each have different gifts. And I discovered through the loss of my father that I have a propensity to want to be with others when they're going through a difficult time. And so, you know, your training that I received empowered me with skills and tools to do just that, and really just be there wherever my client is, so that I can help them face what's in front of them and then also figure out a way how to move forward. And maybe, you know, for a client who's dying, their moving forward is in a different realm, right? That maybe we don't see and hear, but then for their loved ones, how do they continue that bond even though they're, you know, grandfather, sister, whatever it might be, isn't physically on this earth with them.
So, and do you do continuing education, or is it more like,
most definitely, Barry, there is, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And there is so much about death and dying and grieving that is out there that we didn't realize because our society, in my opinion, isn't one that generally accepts that life isn't always sunshine and rainbows every day.
Why do you think it's so hard for people to talk about death and so on and so forth?
Yeah, death is a hard topic. You know, it's painful. When you love somebody, you don't want to imagine, you know, a part of your life without them. But not giving yourself that opportunity to, you know, I guess, face that a reality that day may come, it really kind of takes away an opportunity for you to make the most time with that person, and really to make the most out of the time that you have with your life. Mm-hmm. I think as a society, we've kind of, you know, we're kind of anti-aging, right? Like walk down the whatever, any cosmetic aisle in Target and, you know, anti-aging this, anti-aging that. we don't want to age, and we don't want to die, right? But the fact of the matter is, you know, we are on this earth and, you know, barring an unforeseen circumstance, we'll probably be living for longer than what we used to be living, and we're doing it kind of more separated than we used to, right?
Yeah, we're atomized.
Yeah, totally. Great word, atomized. You know, back in hunter-gatherer days, we were living in villages, you know, a town, maybe under one roof was your mom and dad, and maybe their mom or dad, and, you know, maybe an aunt or uncle and your kids and maybe a cousin. Mm-hmm. So there was multiple generations and we just had exposure to people at different stages of life. And now that we are atomized, to use your word, we just don't get that unless it's on TV.
I also think so many people are disconnected from nature. I mean, when I moved up here for the first time, I grew up in a city. You know, I grew up in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm, same.
And it's like when you live out in the country, there's so many things that you take for granted when you're like, you know, you don't have to call the propane company to fill up the tanks. You know, all that type of thing.
Yes, so, totally.
So we're totally disengaged. You know, I think most people are pretty disengaged from the nature, the natural process And then again, they're separated from their families. And,
yes.
And families are smaller too.
Yeah. Yeah. All. Yes. Check, check, check. And check again.
Right.
You know, it's so funny that you call that out because, I too grew up in LA and, you know, moved to the Central Coast in 2021 and I love it here. Partly because of my connection now and proximity to being in nature. In fact, I was just amazed because I was about to go water the plants in the backyard the other day, and I found a shedded lizard skin, mm-hmm. like the whole thing. And I thought, wow, what a find. And, you know, like I took a picture of it and I sent it to my friends. And I'm sure they're like, what kind of country bumpkin did she become that this lizard skin is... you know, entertaining her, but at the same time, it's because in our cities, we there's just not an opportunity to witness mm-hmm. that kind of change in right. things, right?
Right, absolutely. So you speak of death as a natural process.
Yes.
And so why don't you talk about what the process looks like and yeah. how you work a client and a family through that.
Yeah, of course. So not all of my clients are, you know, closer to their end of life, right? I have clients that are healthy adults like you and I. You know, I have clients that are kind of that sandwich generation. So they're raising their own kids and then their parents are getting older. And, you know, their parents, you know, may be dealing with a terminal illness. And then I have clients that have approached me, because they are more aware of what's, you know, coming down the pipeline in the next, you know, 18 months or so. You know, but every single person's death is going to be as unique as they are as an individual. But we are all, as humans, our bodies all know how to die, kind of the same way our bodies knew what to do developing, you know, as a baby and then, you know, being born. And so there are, although, you know, the circumstances of a death will be different, you know, based on health or, you know, sudden, if it's sudden or what have you. There are stages to the dying process that will occur, assuming that, you know, the person is aging naturally. And those things can look like, you know, less of a desire to eat and drink, becoming more and more immobile, you know, skin changes, weight changes, you know, cognitive function. And then as we, you know, get past those early and middle stages of dying, you know, really those late stages of dying when there's active dying, you might start to notice things such as, you know, temperature changes, breathing changes. There's a thing called, it's called a death rattle, mm-hmm. Which can sound like a bit of a gurgling. But essentially what that is there is fluid getting kind of stuck in the upper airways, and if a person's not is in a certain position, that can sound really unsettling. And so, as a death doula, because we don't typically have these exposures to those sorts of things, a death doula can be there for a family and help normalize what they're witnessing, so they don't have to have this, oh my gosh, this is an emergency kind of reaction. Mm-hmm. And then they can understand that this is normal, and then they can really kind of still be present in the moment and be there with their loved one and each other.
And when you're doing this work, you're usually at the person's home or family member's
correct.
Home?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, you're
yes.
not you're not in a medical facility.
No, no. End-of-life doulas are definitely complements, but I would be part of a care team. So if a person's on medical hospice, you know, they're receiving that nursing care. They're, you know, a nurse is probably coming in a couple times a week or even a day. They might have some clergy support. I would be there, you know, along with friends and family. And, you know, a lot of the service that can also be provided would include vigil service, which is during the bedside, when one is actively dying, I can be bedside with their loved one while they maybe get, you know, a couple hours of sleep, which is going to be so important because, you know, adrenaline is high, emotions are high, but we need to take care of ourselves and recharge our batteries so that we can, you know, really be, again, as present as possible to be there for this sacred event.
I know you're gonna have some case studies a little later on to discuss, but and so hopefully I'm not jumping the gun here, but I'm always amazed that, you know, somebody who's dying often will wait for that one person that they're waiting for. They'll stay alive long enough to see that one person, and once that happens, then they check out.
Yeah,
is that a pretty common experience?
It is, and I'm, you know, stick around for after the commercial break so I can tell you my case study.
All right, good, okay, good. Let's take a few minutes here. Now, California is a right-to-die state since 2016.
Correct.
Right? And I actually went to the websites that you sent me. And I mean, it's a pretty fairly regimented process.
Most definitely.
So you want to share what that process looks like?
Yeah, of course. So California is one of, I believe, 11 states right now, and the District of Columbia, that allows for a terminally ill patient with a life expectancy of 6 months or less to take a medical cocktail of sorts to hasten their death. Mm-hmm. And you know, there is a regimented process that the patient must go through with their doctor to confirm that they are of sound mind and they are acting upon their own volition, and that they have the physical capacity to take the medicine themselves.
Okay.
And you know, this is the ability to exercise that right is exclusively for patients who have a terminal illness with 6 months or less to live. And as a death doula, as a end-of-life doula, I've been trained through ACMAID. It's the American Clinician Medical Aid in Dying, you know, kind of association, to be present to support somebody who's making that type of decision.
And so tell is that going to be one of your case studies?
I have one of those too.
Okay, good. All right. Well, we're on the topic. Let's share that one.
Sure. So, you know, it is I guess first of all, there could be a lot of different opinions about that right. And, you know, regardless of what one's, you know, religious or moral stance might be, I believe that it is important for everyone to understand what is available to them, and that people need to receive unbiased education so that they can make the decision that is most relevant to their own highest, you know, good and value.
Well, I guess, you know, I've done some reading. I mean, this has been going on in Europe for quite some
time. It has, yes.
And, you know, there are, I mean, you could say that the right to die has been abused in certain regards. And there's all these ethical issues. You know, the ones that come to mind for me are young people who are physically okay, but they're tortured souls.
Yes.
And they end up, I mean, they're not terminal, really,
mm-hmm.
but they're allowed in Europe anyway, oftentimes, mm-hmm. to take their own lives because they just can't cope with reality.
Right.
And I, you know, again, I mean, I can understand that at some level, but it's troublesome to me that, you know, the government's involved.
I know.
And all that kind of, you know, and who's making the decisions and who's encouraging them. Well, listen, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about your case study.
Yes.
And the importance of ritual and ceremony.
Yeah.
In dying. So, folks, stand by. We'll be right back.
not usually a reviewer, but I had an amazing experience at Davis Body Shop. From start to finish, the experience was ideal. Everyone was friendly, helpful, and professional. They kept me updated, did quality work, and had me in and out. No hassles, and returned my vehicle to me in perfect condition.
If you ever have an accident and need to repair your car, you could do what Ann did from Paso Robles. She took her car to Davis Body Shop. And Peggy from Atascadero said,
our family needed repairs to one of our cars, and friends had recommended Davis Body Shop. We were very pleased with their helpfulness, their attention to detail that was provided to us. They explained the process and kept us updated as repairs were made. They also assisted us in securing a rental car. I would definitely recommend them to anyone who needs repairs to a car.
Davis Body Shop is the area's largest auto body collision specialist on El Camino Real at Atascadero and on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet. Rich London, the mattress specialist. Tell me what shoppers will find at your store.
Well, I've got regular flat beds from twin size to king size. And then, of course, I've got adjustable beds where the bases go up and down so it's easier to get out of bed. You don't have to worry about acid reflux or if you have snoring problems or if you have bad circulation in your legs. All those things are benefits that the adjustable bases can give you.
The mattress specialist, 13th and Riverside, Paso Robles.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Hammond Overhead Door Company has known for over 50 years that you have a choice when it comes to garage door services. That's why they utilize only the finest garage door materials and equipment, and their fleet of fully equipped service vehicles are ready to serve your maintenance and repair needs quickly and efficiently. Hammond Overhead Door Company. Call 238-0524 or go to HammondOverheadDoor.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Melissa LaPena, end-of-life doula. And you can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Somebody, whoever was trying to call in during the break, if you call back, I will definitely pick up the phone. We don't normally pick up the phone when we're on commercial break. So anyway, Melissa, let's get into your case studies.
Sure.
Let's give us number one.
Okay, number one. Let's see. Well, I worked with a client. So I've worked with clients for the past couple of years. Oh.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question for Melissa?
Yeah, is this Barry?
It is.
Yeah, hi, Barry. It's Steve Brody.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hi, good. Aren't you on the air right now?
Yes, well, that's why I thought you had a question. You're calling in on the call-in line.
Oh, okay.
You have a question?
Well, Steve, the question would be,
go ahead.
As you know, we're doing a film called Final Decision, which is all about a right to die situation, and I'm curious as to Melissa's take on is that process when somebody is going through that end-of-life period different for, and how so, for someone who is choosing to do that versus someone who is not?
Hi, Steve. Thanks
hi.
For the question. I just want to make sure I understand that so you're asking if somebody was to exercise their right to die with the medication, how is their experience different from someone who might be dying from just natural causes or, you know, cancer, ALS, something like that?
Yeah, like that end-of-life period. Not medically different, but, you know, as you said, psychologically,
sure.
Spiritually, which is what you do.
Yeah.
How is that for the family, for the patient? Are there any noticeable differences that you've noticed?
Yeah, I would say yes, there are. You know, with the right to die, when a patient goes through the process and gets that medication, only about 2/3 of the people do use that medication. And so sometimes it's just the peace of mind that can come with having, you know, a way out, for lack of better words.
Yeah, you have that option.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the family experience could be difficult sometimes because, I'll share, you know, perhaps the, children may not want to see their parent go prematurely. And so that could really be a source of pain and conflict. But
yeah, we see that. That's in our film.
Yeah,
film. Yeah, that's. I would think so. Everybody's got a different feeling and opinion about it.
Exactly, and yeah. Really, as an end of life doula, you know, part of my commitment is to my client that I'm going to advocate for him or her and their, you know, what they want. And so, you know, what I've done to kind of navigate those conversations is kind of bring it back to what's important to, you know, your dad, or, you know, what we're here to do is support him in this choice.
As a psychologist, when I've worked with families, I always say that the person who's dying is at the tip of the triangle, the top of the pyramid. And that needs to be our focal point.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
Steve, great question. Thanks for calling in, and keep us posted on how you're doing with the final decision and
sure
the process.
Barry, and thank you very much for hosting us with Hidden Creek.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was a great event.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Steve.
Okay, so real quickly, you know, I want to make sure, I want to hear one of you. Well, I'm going to let you pick. Would you rather talk about the importance of ritual and ceremony or as opposed to the case studies?
I can hopefully do both.
Okay.
So ritual and ceremony. Contrary to what many people think, ritual and ceremony do not have to involve the pomp and circumstance that many of us may have grown up with. I grew up in the Catholic Church, and I'm not saying pomp and circumstance is a bad thing, but sometimes you think it's got to be really ornate, and it doesn't have to be. A ritual is simply the marking of a moment, and you can mark that moment, you know, in the morning when you're making your cup of coffee and you're, you know, pouring in that dollop of cream and watching it turn the black to a brown, and you are excited to have that caffeine. That could be a morning ritual. You can do something very similar for your loved ones by marking their impact on your life simply by lighting a candle, saying their name out loud or, you know, to yourself and blowing it out and watching the smoke dissipate. You're marking a moment of love and connection, and that's what ritual can be. And let's see, a case study, a vigil plan. So I have worked with a client who was actually going to use medical aid in dying. And I had asked her, you know, what's important for you, you know, at your bedside? And she hadn't really thought about it. And so we started to just have these conversations about things she liked, music, lighting, time of day, you know, textiles around her, photographs. And, you know, by learning about who she is and was as a person, different stages of her life, we were able to surround her with things that she loved and have an environment that really created a sense of peace and ease for her during her last moments on Earth.
Before, I'm going to ask you one last question.
Yes.
How can people get in touch with you and give them your website?
Yes, thank you. So my business is called Living Your Best End, and you can get in touch with me on the various social media outlets or send me an email, melissa@livingyourbestend.com. I'm also going to be hosting either a Death Over Drafts or Death Cafe in a couple months in the North County. So if you want to see me in person and talk about all things death and dying without an agenda, stay tuned for that. Sign up for my newsletter.
All right. Closing question. How has this changed your life, being a death doula?
I love life. I think even before people knew that I have a sunny disposition, working in death care has increased my vitality.
Wow. You know, you're just so perky. I can't imagine anybody dying on your watch.
Death doesn't have to be creepy.
I guess
I'll
not.
I'll help it not be.
That should be your byline. That's my new tagline. All right, folks, we'll be back with the Cattlemen's Association, Steve Arnold, and Kevin Kester. It's going to be a great hour, so stay tuned. Melissa, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Barry.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 1 o'clock.